The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from theteenmagazine.com. Anna Wintour just stepped down. What this means for teenage style everywhere. This article was written by Anwesha Panda on July 10th. For decades, Anna Wintour was the fashion world. Her signature bob and black sunglasses didn't just grace the front row of every major runway. They made it. She didn't follow trends. She decided them. She was, in many ways, fashion's most iconic gatekeeper. But now, as Vogue's longtime editor-in-chief steps down from her post, the question isn't just who's next, it's what now? For Gen Z, this isn't just about a powerful woman in publishing retiring. It's about a long overdue shift in the fashion narrative, one where power, taste, and influence aren't defined by a single person in a Condé Nast office, but by millions of us with cameras, creativity, and closets full of dreams and contradictions. The legacy of Anna Wintour and why it mattered. For as long as many of us have been alive, Anna Wintour has been fashion's final word. Her name has become shorthand for taste, control, and quiet power. For those who watched The Devil Wears Prada, read Vogue, or dreamed of the Met Gala, Wintour felt mythic. An editor who didn't just reflect fashion, but ruled it. She was often the first to wear a trend before it became one. She could make or break a career with a single feature. But now, 36 years later, she's stepping down. And for the first time in a long time, we're left with a blank page. So here's the question. What kind of fashion world are we going to write? What if fashion doesn't need one voice, but many more? So what does this mean for Gen Z? For Gen Z, this moment isn't about mourning the loss of a fashion icon. It's about recognizing the power of a shift, the kind that unleashes a new kind of creativity, bolder, more vulnerable, and rooted in identity, not bound by the approval of a single person. It means we get to define what good taste even means. Maybe it looks like hand-painted jeans, mismatched earrings, or an outfit inspired by your childhood cartoon phase. We're the ones calling the shots. We become the curators, editors, and tastemakers, scouring thrift stores, sharing our finds in group chats, and showcasing our styles on TikTok or Instagram, and through the stories we tell with our clothes. We stop chasing aesthetics made to impress institutions and start dressing in ways that feel like home, let us shine, and make us feel heard and seen, even if it's messy, mismatched, or mood-dependent. Fashion is no longer something we aspire to fit into. It's something we shape and create from within. And in this new landscape, Gen Z's voice is louder than ever, diverse, bold, and unapologetically authentic. The shift from one voice to a chorus. Here's a real take. Gen Z didn't grow up waiting for Vogue to tell us what's in. We grew up with Tumblr aesthetics, TikTok cores, YouTube hauls, and Pinterest boards. Fashion came to us not from luxury gatekeepers, but from kids our age sewing in their bedrooms, pairing cowboy boots with funky t-shirts, and posting it online without asking for permission and sometimes getting in trouble. We didn't inherit a fashion rule book. We made our own. We wear glitter because it feels powerful. We wear thrifted clothes because we care about the planet. We layer childhood jewelry with baggy cargos because we're reclaiming our girlhood on our terms. Fashion is not only our protest, it's our poetry, our punctuation mark, our identity. Every fashion statement we make speaks a story of its own. We aren't chasing trends. We're trying to feel something, to say something. We're asking to be heard. And that's a very different editorial mission than the one Vogue was built on. The Vogue we need now. With Anna Wintour's exit, Vogue stands at a crossroads, not to perfect culture, but to join it. The future of fashion media isn't polished or elite. It's real, raw, and radically inclusive. We need young voices who speak both couture and community. We need stories on anxiety, ethics, secondhand joy, and subway icons. We need a magazine that feels less distant and more warm, messy, human. The best way to honor Wintour isn't imitation, it's evolution. Take off the sunglasses. Let the world in. And if you're wondering how this shift feels from a Gen Z lens, someone gets it. Elu Ulug, contributor at HYGOI magazine, said, "Anna Wintour walked into a room in Chanel sunglasses, cutting the air with silence, and quietly rearranged the culture. Now the gate is cracked. A 17-year-old in Lagos can go viral for digital couture, and an ex-stylist in Paris can build a cult following from a blog that critiques Fashion Week in meme form. This is the new terrain, messier, louder, but infinitely more alive. Less perfect, more real. Vogue has a chance to become something more real, inclusive, and connected. What we need now isn't perfection. It's honesty, warmth, and a voice that listens. Let's hope Vogue is ready to grow with us." Our next article from theteenmagazine.com. Preserving Human Identity in the Age of AI, A Call for Conscious Integration. This article was written by Gary Guo on July 3rd. Have you ever been caught writing your English project with AI? My classmate wrote a beautiful dystopian story with AI, and after many conversations with teachers, he received a conduct reward. As artificial intelligence, AI, becomes increasingly embedded in our daily lives, it's imperative to reflect on how this technology influences our sense of self, creativity, and autonomy. While AI offers remarkable efficiencies and capabilities, we must ensure it's not diminishing our creativity, spreading false information, or putting users' data at risk. AI is taking away our humanity. On November 30, 2022, ChatGPT was released, and it marked the start of the era where students no longer have to write, draw, and calculate. AI tools proliferated in creative industries, For instance, Netflix's animated science fiction short film, The Dog and the Boy, talking about the friendship between a boy and a robot dog, exemplifies the blend of AI technology with traditional storytelling. The creators used AI to draw the background for the animation, saying they didn't have enough resources to pay animators. The unique ways human beings could have created the background to illustrate the story were absent. If humans were creating the background, there might be more diverse ways the background color would visually resonate with the characters to evoke emotions, taking away the human emotions that the film could convey. Of course, AI can help students with repetitive tasks such as organizing documents, calculating statistics, or researching. Students can then focus on the creative and imaginative aspects of their work. For example, when writing a history essay, you could type, "Find me 5 reliable sources on the medication used during surgery in the Roman Empire." AI will then spit out 5 links. However, it's important not to type, "Write me a paragraph about the medication used during surgery in the Roman Empire." It's okay to have AI do the tiring work of looking for links online to increase your working efficiency. However, the actual work of weaving the available information together into a net should be done by people. Every person has a different way of weaving the net, but AI will give different users the same net. Relying on AI to write for us diminishes human creativity and gradually pushes us toward a uniform way of thinking. If everyone just uses AI-generated content, it's inevitable that the overall diversity of ideas across all fields will decrease. AI isn't 100% accurate. Misinformation can be easily spread if users copy and paste the generated content without thinking or fact-checking. On November 15, 2022, Meta released an AI tool called Galactica, a new large language model designed to assist scientists. Meta took down Galactica only 3 days after the release. Even though Galactica featured 48 million examples of scientific articles, websites, textbooks, lecture notes, and encyclopedias, it was not able to distinguish between true and false. It made up fake papers and attributed them to real authors. Therefore, over-reliance on the big language models can lead to false information and plagiarism for students. For example, when I was using AI to find research papers about confidence leading to success, the links it provided were all invalid links with made-up titles and contents. If I were to use the source without checking the link, I could be accused of academic dishonesty, and my credibility as a writer could be seriously damaged. AI can leak your private information. When you are using AI, AI is also using you. Training new models always requires a large amount of data, which largely comes from users. However, your personal information, including your phone number, address, occupation, and daily habits, could be sold by companies interested in profiting from your information or used by individuals with malicious intentions. In 2023, for example, the OpenAI CEO admitted that some users on ChatGPT could see others' conversation titles, short summaries that label the chat, due to a system bug. The more we depend on AI, the more likely we are to share our personal information with it, which could be leaked and used against us. While AI is powerful and can do almost anything for us, we need to use it carefully. It can lower our creativity, spread false information, and risk our privacy. Today, educators, policymakers, creators, and students need to work together to build systems that balance the convenience AI brings with the problems it can cause. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com. Girls Before Brides, the Global Epidemic We Don't Call Slavery. This article was written by Anwitha Kandula on July 2nd. In the haze of borrowed gold and wedding smoke, no one noticed her hands shaking. She was 12. As the wedding attendees toasted champagne, celebrating, Fatima stared at her hands, unable to lift her eyes towards the man she was told to call her husband. He was 32. This isn't an anomaly, but a global epidemic. Before the age of 18, 12 million girls are married every year. Some may be 9. Many never return to school. Most are never asked if they want this life. Child marriage doesn't just steal childhoods. It is a form of slavery dressed up in tradition. Beneath the veil, the hidden chains. Around the world, from dusty courtrooms in the United States to the city slums in Bangladesh to economically struggling villages in Niger, young girls are constantly being handed over under threat, under age, under duress. Marriage within these cases is far from a union. They're a sentence. Behind closed doors, child brides face forced pregnancy, abuse, and relentless control over their bodies. According to the United Nations Fund, girls aged from 10 to 14 are 5 times more likely to die from childbirth than women in their 20s. Yet, they are forced into motherhood before they even understand menstruation. From the UNHCR, one survivor states, "I was married at 13. I tried to run, but my father said, 'You belong to him now.' I bled for days after the wedding night. I thought I was dying." She wasn't dying. She was beginning the life they'd chosen for her. When the law looks the other way. The gruesome reality goes against the legal obligations of how most countries prohibit marriage under 18. In countries such as Yemen, Sudan, and parts of Latin America, exceptions are made with parental consent through religious or customary law. In the United States, child marriages are still legal in 40 states. Let that sink in. In the land that many internationals and immigrants might perceive as the land of the free, thousands of young girls are legally trapped in adult marriages, often with no right to divorce, no way to escape, and no help from the system that claimed to protect them. There aren't any loopholes. They are escape hatches for abusers, not the victims. Not culture, not custom, just cruelty. We need to stop calling child marriage a cultural tradition. Culture should never be a cover for violence. No celebration justifies a contract that robs a girl of her education, her freedom, and her voice. This was never about a wedding dress, but consent, control, power. Child marriage is institutionalized trafficking. It is gender-based violence. And when we tiptoe around it, out of fear of being insensitive to various norms for different cultures, we protect the oppressors. In truth, there is nothing traditional about trauma. Global complicity, silent endorsement. How does this continue? Because silence is easy. Because we've normalized the idea that girlhood is a thing to be auctioned off or erased. Because girls are told to be quiet. However, many of us don't see the girls. We see statistics, numbers, foreign headlines. But child marriage isn't far away. It's in rural farmland, in refugee camps, in broken court systems. It is here and happening every moment. What can we do? We start by listening to survivors, believing them, amplifying them. We challenge laws that allow marriage under 18, no exceptions. We demand access to education and reproductive health care. We support grassroots organizations like Girls Not Brides, TOSTAN, and Equality Now. And we stop romanticizing weddings where the bride still carries a lunchbox in her backpack. Change starts when we call this what it is: slavery, not ceremony, a crisis, not a custom. And if you're reading this, you're already part of that change. Because awareness isn't passive, it's powerful. It's the beginning of a revolution. And there is a note. Name changed for protection. If you or someone you know is at risk of child marriage or abuse, contact the Child Help National Child Abuse Hotline, 1-800-422-4453, or visit girlsnotbrides.org for global resources. Our next article from teenvogue.com. Next year, America turns 250. These Gen Zers want to make it a turning point. This article was written by Youth250 on July 4th, and there is a note. This open letter from Youth250, Dear America, urges leaders to share power, elevate youth voices, and co-create what comes next. Youth 250 is an initiative from Made by Us, a nationwide network of museums, historic sites, libraries, and archives joining forces to inform and inspire the next generation. Youth 250 is the dynamic, nonpartisan initiative to capture young people's imaginations, ideas, and input as the United States turns 250 years old in 2026. Dear America, next year the United States turns 250 years old. But it's more than just a big birthday party. The U.S. 250th is a milestone moment to ask ourselves whether the America we're living in has lived up to its founding promises. For young people today, political division, economic instability, and global crises are the backdrop to our coming-of-age story. We're the largest youth generation in U.S. history, but we've had few chances to shape the decisions that define our future. Our country was started by a letter, a defiant vision and call to action, from people younger than most of those in power today. We're starting up where they left off. A country that builds with young people is a better country. If the United States of America is going to have a future, then America's future must have a seat at the table. It's time to rekindle the revolutionary spirit of urgency and invention. Gen Z is ready to lead our country into the future. With our country's 250th birthday a year away, we're calling on leaders and young people nationwide to make this moment a turning point. Over the next 12 months, Join us in making these commitments. Include young people in every room where decisions are made, not with tokenization, but with real responsibility, roles, and influences. Share our stories, ideas, and experiences on your platforms. We bring a unique point of view to shape culture and policy. Co-create the future. Don't design for us, design with us. We have our finger on the pulse, and our insights are essential for business, media, government, and society. This is your invitation. If you run a business, lead an institution, shape policy, or influence culture, pass the mic to the next generation. Challenge your peers to do the same. And if you're a young person reading this, you already belong in this work. Join the Youth 250 movement. Volunteer your voice for the National Content Corps. Ask questions. Take action. Help write the story of where we go from here. The best birthday gift we can give this country isn't nostalgia. It's a power shared across generations. To imagine. To govern. To build what comes next. With urgency and hope, Youth 250. Co-signed by leading efforts across sectors, All In Campus Democracy Challenge, Amplify Pledge, Atlanta History Center, Campus Compact, Charles Wright Museum of African American History, CIRCLE, Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, Civics Unplugged, Co-Generate, Connor Prairie, Do Something, Future Caucus, Generation Citizen, Her Campus, Hope Lab, History Co-Lab, History Miami Museum, Institute for Citizens and Scholars, Japanese American National Museum, Lincoln Presidential Foundation, Made by Us, National Archives Foundation, National Youth Leadership Council, New Voters, PBS News Student Reporting Labs, Points of Light, Senator John Hines History Center, The New York Historical, Young Futures, Youth Service America. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.